Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Like, wait a minute, you like this song too? Oh my God, that's my favorite song, right? And when it's the oh my God, that's my favorite song moment, that makes you realize, oh, we belong in the same space.
Hear how Marvin Gaye inspired one Iranian protester to say what's going on. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, December 4th, 2014. I'm Priyanka Deo. Students are gathering right now at McCarthy Quad on the USC campus in memory of Michael Brown and Eric Garner. Grand juries in New York and Ferguson, Missouri recently declined to indict the two police officers who shot the unarmed men. Reporter Sarah Zahedi is at the scene.
Hi, Priyanka. I am on campus right now, and there's a discussion being held outside of Doheny Library for students and community members to discuss Michael Brown and Eric Garner's cases and how the world has been responding to the news of these cases.
Great, Sarah. And what is going on later tonight?
So at 5, the students and everyone else who is at the discussion will march to McCarthy Quad together to hold a candlelit vigil in memory of the victims, as well as an open mic night. And that'll be a space for students to discuss their thoughts and emotions about these cases further.
Okay. And what are people's thoughts on the issue?
People at tonight's event are here in support of the victims and calling for justice for these victims. They believe that these cases, at the very least, deserve greater attention by law enforcement systems than they are currently being given. Mm-hmm. And I spoke with Daniel Hickson, who is a junior at USC and is one of the people who put on last week's on-campus protest to the jury decision in the case of Michael Brown.
All right.
I personally come out just because I'm tired of, like, having to make another poster and talk about another person who's not getting justice, and it's not like a black and white issue, it's a police brutality issue of cops constantly getting off for things that they've done. It's nice to know that your campus supports you. Not all people here will ever understand what it's truly like to be discriminated against, or like understand what it's like to be treated a certain way just because the way you look or from where you come from. But even though you don't understand it, you can at least empathize with it.
Thanks, Sarah. The LAPD held a press conference today to discuss recent protests in the city. Nicole Hurrup has more.
Three LAPD officers violated policy when they shot and killed an unarmed man in downtown LA last year. The LA Police Commission rejected the officers' claim that the man posed a deadly threat. The new report comes after the highly publicized officer-involved killings of Edward Garner and Michael Brown. Those two killings sent protesters out into the streets of LA and other major cities. LAPD Commander Andrew Smith said he supports the First Amendment, but not at the expense of community safety.
If people want to peacefully protest, we're absolutely fine with that, but we really can't let people get out there and harm other people.
Department officials didn't specify what disciplinary actions will be taken against the offending officers. Nicole Hurrup, Annenberg Radio News.
Fast food workers gathered in front of a McDonald's in downtown LA today, rallying to increase minimum wage to $15 an hour and a union. The group cheered and danced in yellow capes with the words "Luncha 15," meaning fight for 15. Edgar Gonzalez is an employee at McDonald's. He says his current pay of $9 an hour is not enough to put food on the table.
I wanna get paid a better wage because I think I work too hard. I work a lot, and then working two jobs and still not making ends meet, I don't think it's fair because I'm working so much for my daughter to have a home, but at the same time, her father is not at home.
McDonald's said in a statement that it supports paying its workers fair wages, but that wage increases should be implemented over time to soften the impact on small and medium-sized businesses. Workers in 190 other cities, including Boston and Chicago, also held rallies today. More and more visitors to the LA area are turning to an alternative and often less expensive option for their travels, Airbnb. It's the world's biggest marketplace for booking local accommodations from rooms to houses to villas. But as Belinda Kai reports, the company is facing some extra scrutiny.
Today, Airbnb released a study that emphasizes the positive economic, social, and environmental impacts it has on the city. The study found that the company generates millions in economic activity and supports thousands of jobs per year. The report comes as the Los Angeles City Council is pushing for tougher regulations on these types of short-term rental options. David Owen, who works with public policy at Airbnb, talks to local stakeholders and policymakers to educate them about home sharing.
We learned that in 1 year, our hosts and guests generated more than $312 million of economic activity in Los Angeles. We also looked at the profile of our hosts and guests, and nearly two-thirds of them use the revenue to continue affording to stay in their homes. Here in Los Angeles, a significant number, almost half of our hosts, work in the creative, entertainment, and recreation industries. So it's a significant way for folks who are moving to LA to follow their dreams and help keep LA the creative capital of the world to do so.
Rebecca Verstraten McSparum hosted the Airbnb event today that highlights the positive findings of the new study. This took place at her home, which she has been hosting to travelers for about a year and a half.
We're both in creative industries. I'm the director of a film school. My husband is a musician. We have a recording studio upstairs. And we often have, you know, band members and things in and out of the house all of the time. But because his is very much of a fluctuating income, it's been fantastic to have in terms of just supporting us, making sure that things kind of stay even.
Despite this, some are wary of the home sharing idea. Some city council members are concerned that some Airbnb operators are buying whole units or buildings and functioning essentially like a hotel without paying taxes. Ray Patel is the president of the Northeast Los Angeles Hotel Owners Association.
It is logically some level of room loss. Where that gauges, I don't know. But definitely, I mean, if you have a brick-and-mortar hotel, it's got, you know, staff and paying all the license fees and costs and insurance, and then you have somebody down the road that decides to put their, you know, back room or apartment online with Airbnb, and they're driving an income, they can, you know, beat the hotel prices by lowering their rates substantially just to get a guest in. Then, as you can see, we lost one consumer there.
City Council Member Mike Bonin and Herb Wesson are asking city lawyers and legislative analysts to examine the home sharing system. Belinda Kai, Annenberg Radio News.
Funding cuts will leave 11,000 LA County families without access to subsidized preschool in 2016. The program is funded by First 5 LA using shrinking tobacco tax revenue. The nonprofit childhood advocacy group said they'll be focusing more on supporting parents and caregivers rather than direct services like preschool. First 5 LA officials say the new strategy will help more children over a longer period of time instead of a lucky few. The state of California may have a budget surplus, but the state Senate is facing a budget shortfall of up to $4 million. Last month, the California legislature's upper chamber laid off 39 of its roughly 1,000 staff members. The Senate President Pro Tem's chief of staff told the Sacramento Bee that higher health care costs, slower budget growth during the recession, and having too many employees contributed to the shortfall. It's a beautiful day in LA, but not for long. Tonight will cool to 50 degrees by sundown. Friday and Saturday will see partly sunny skies with a high of 70 degrees, cooling to 55 degrees by evening. Overcast skies and light rain will be back on Sunday, but the temperature will remain pleasant at 72 degrees. Later on Annenberg Radio News, listen to a longtime polo player talk about his love for the sport. Today, we are running the last piece in the Detour series, The Thing I Do, where we profile people who excel in something. Matt Levin found a man of a certain age who swings a polo mallet like no one's business.
Come on. Yeah. Hate to tell you my age. Okay. This is Maynard Britton. Everyone calls me Mickey. I've been around horses for a lot of years. I got really interested in playing polo as a teenager, but I didn't play until I was 18 years old at the University of Arizona in 1955.
Hi. Hi, Bella.
How are you? Look, your baby's sleeping. She's taking a little afternoon nap.
Or right the there. Horses that you like, do they have the personalities of the people that you like?
Oh, of course. Absolutely, yeah. You know, forward, no nonsense, affectionate, non-complex, and productive. When we're in the game, they know when I go to a back shot, they can pretty much tell where it's going to go, and they prepare, and they pick up the ball and go off on a offensive run and hopefully score a goal. Okay, I get up out of the saddle, I turn, I hesitate out this way, I let the mallet drop naturally, and it just flows off my mallet and it goes where it's supposed to go. Because I would be moving when I'm doing it in the game. And the combination of the velocity and the timing allows you to, you know, get more distance and more height when you're moving. But I'm doing it from a standstill.
Do you want to give it a try moving if I stand
sure, I
back
could.
A little bit?
I could.
Okay. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you do get some pace on that.
And I got hit from behind, and my horse fell and rolled over me. And so my knee was blown up to the point where I thought I was going to need surgery, and my shoulder was incapacitated. I couldn't even lift my left arm.
How will you know when it's time to stop?
The horse will tell me.
That story was produced by Matt Levin. Beginning next Wednesday, the Sager Strom Center for the Arts will present Dr. Seuss, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the musical. Maureen Lee Lenker spoke with the actor Stephen Carl, who currently tours as the Grinch.
The holiday season is upon us, and that means Christmas entertainment galore, from radio to television to the stage. One of the most beloved Christmas classics, Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, has been turned into a Broadway musical and is coming to Southern California December 10th. I got a direct line to Whoville to speak to the Grinch himself, actor Stefan Karl. I asked him about playing villains and taking on an iconic role like the Green Grump with a heart two sizes too small.
There is no villain who's, you know, only a bad guy. They're usually just misunderstood, and usually they come with a lot of comedy as well. You always have to approach these characters as human beings. And that's, of course, a challenge. I read the book again and again and again and watched the cartoon again and again and again. What I chose to do in terms of that was the physical comedy part of it. So I watched the cartoon and just picked moves from a cartoon character from here and there and tried to add them into my performance.
This marks Carl's 7th holiday season playing the Grinch. I asked him why he keeps coming back for more.
After this season, I've done 500 shows. Every show is different. Different audience, different response. You always pick out one audience member and you do it for him. You know, and then the company that I work with, the cast and the crew, we've become like a family. It's about relationship and about family, just like the show.
Between the Grinch and his previous role on the kids' show, LazyTown, Carl has made a career in family entertainment. I wanted to know what draws him to performing for children.
They love drama. They love comedy. And they're so pure. When we grow up, we all start behaving. I don't like behaving. I just want to be a kid in my heart myself. The kids understand the Grinch perfectly, for an example. They really do. They want to hug him. And we did a survey. About 70% of the children that come to our show are coming to live theater for the first time in their lives, you know, to be someone they're going to be the first one to see. So it's a great pressure on you as an actor and performer, for sure.
But what message does he want to pass along besides the joy of live performance?
It's about the children. It's about being together as a family. And so at the end of the day, I don't hate Christmas. I actually love it.
Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the musical, starring Stefan Karl, is playing at the Sagerstrom Center for the Arts in Orange County, December 10th through 14th.
You're
Merry Grinchmas from Maureen Lee Lenker,
Grinch.
Annenberg Radio News.
you really are a heel.
More than 11,000 women are incarcerated in California prisons. Many of these women have been convicted of acts of self-defense. Charmaine Petit of Los Angeles was convicted of second-degree murder. She started serving her prison sentence in 1988. She's now 56 years old. I spoke to Petit, who was released from prison just 8 weeks ago.
What happened to you?
In 1986, mm-hmm. I was trying to get cocaine. And I gave the guy my money, and he ran off with my money. A month later, I saw him, and I said, "Hey, what happened to my money?" And he was like, "Come on in, let's talk about it." And I was like, "I don't want to come in. What happened to the money?" And he was like, "No, come in." He kept saying, "Come in, come in, come in, come in." And everything kept telling me, "Don't go in," but I ended up going in anyway. He called me into the room, and instead of trying to pay me, he tried to have sex with me. So I tried to get out that last time, and that's when he hit me. He said, "Don't make me hurt you." And he hit me in my eye, and I stabbed him.
So what did you feel at that time?
You talking about when I got out?
When you were sentenced. Because I'm sure
When I was sentenced, I felt like I already knew I was going to prison because of how the trial was going. The day I was sentenced, I didn't even hear what he said. Whatever he said, it just went over my head. And I was like, I had to turn my turn. I said, "What did he say?" And then he said, "15 to life plus that one enhancement." And I was like, "What?" And then I just didn't show no emotion. I just shut down because I did not want them to think that they had, I didn't want them to think that they had really, like, shook me to my core, which they did, but I didn't want them to know they did, because they knew what they were doing wasn't right either. You know what I mean? I know I was there for a crime, but what they were doing was, to me, was a crime too. It was like there was nothing I could do about it. You know, I felt helpless. So I knew I was going to prison.
Besides not being so comfortable in the dark, how else has the experience changed you as a person now that you're completely out?
Right.
That you are at your own will. You're in control of your life.
Right. And you know you don't do things because you know you don't want to go back.
Do you have any regrets?
Of course I have regrets. Yes. I regret that I was ever in that position. I mean, I regret ever going over there. I regret ever trying to get drugs. I regret all of that. Regret not, you know, being there with my kids. I have a lot of regrets. The reality is you can't change it now. So we have to live beyond it. You know what I mean? You can't change nothing that happened.
That was Charmaine Petit, who was released from prison 8 weeks ago. And now we check in with Eric Rubel to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Eric?
Thanks, Bianca. DPS is investigating a dangerous intersection near campus after last night's accident, what they're doing to prevent another student from being injured. An award-winning pop star is performing at USC tonight, the big name that students are already lining up for. And a new program to help college students from President Obama. All these stories and more coming up at ATVN at 6.
Thanks, Eric. Immigrating to a new country, learning a new language, and adapting to a new culture can be tough, but music can help ease the process. Sarah Zahedi and her dad, Firoz Zahedi, explore the ties between music, identity, and cross-cultural communication.
Before I even knew who Marvin Gaye was, and before I knew his music, I knew how to say, "Right on." My dad started saying "right on" after hearing it for the first time as a lyric in Marvin Gaye's song, "What's Going On?" And he hasn't stopped since.
Yeah, right on, man.
What's Going On is one of the first American songs my dad heard after immigrating to Chicago from Iran at the time of the Iranian Revolution of 1979. During the Iranian Revolution, a military unit under the Islamic Revolutionary Guard was responsible for using excessive force against protesters. One of these protesters was my dad.
I was eager to speak up against what is wrong. Everywhere there were secret police. I was even afraid of my own shadow.
As an activist, my dad related to What's Going On's lyrics. You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and get here today. You have got to find a way to bring love in here today. It just makes sense to me. It was like the song was telling my story.
Still, it took a while before he understood those lyrics. When my dad first immigrated to the US, he didn't know much English, and music was one of the ways he was able to learn a bit more. The lyric, Right On, stood out to him.
Right On. Right On was very, so new to me. In the beginning, I didn't know what that means. And the more I could use it, it felt good, because when you use this kind of slang, you feel that you belong.
My dad's experience is not uncommon. This connection between cultural identity and popular music is what Professor Josh Kuhn at USC focuses his work on.
When you immigrate to a country, the US or any other, one of the ways that if you want to say, you know, I want to actually leave behind the world that I came from and adapt and transform and grow into American culture, you know, one of the most prominent ways that that happens is through pop culture.
Kuhn says music helps to construct our identities in this way.
One of the ways that we know who we are is through the songs of our lives, or through the songs that we hear that, in a way, hold up a mirror to our lives.
What's Going On helped my dad get a sense of American pop culture, but it also gave him a sense of himself. It was a song that explained a part of his social identity as he was becoming a new U.S. citizen.
When you dance to that music and listen to that lyrics, you can feel the freedom, you can feel the rhythm.
And as I got older, What's Going On started to shape my identity as well. My dad continued to be an activist. He taught me about human rights issues at home and overseas. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you die. Marvin Gaye was singing about the Vietnam War, but with other conflicts happening every day, I saw that the lyrics are still relevant. It was as if Marvin Gaye was communicating a social message, and I was excited to respond, right on. Even though my dad, me, and other fans of the song are different people, and we identify with the song in different ways, the song connects us.
The language of music is international. It doesn't matter which country's music you're listening.
Like, wait a minute, you like this song too? Oh my God, that's my favorite song. Right, and when it's the oh my God, that's my favorite song moment, that makes you realize, oh, we belong in the same space, right? Even though we might come from totally different backgrounds, totally different countries, speak different languages, that song is our bridge to each other.
The music partly explains how an activist from Iran can relate to new friends in the U.S. and his daughter 30 years later. The music is partly why my dad and I can connect to other fans of the song, simply by saying, right on. And what's great is, it doesn't really matter who those fans are or where they are from. They'll just get it. Sarah Zahedi, Annenberg Radio News.
And that's it for this Thursday and this semester. Many thanks to our Thursday crew, Christian Brown, Belinda Kai, Nia Frank, Rebecca Gibeon, Taylor Haney, Nicole Hurrup, Janet Jamie, Phoebe Meza, Jordan Plout, Selena Say Reynolds, and Jonathan Tolliver. Our board operator is Lexi McAvinci. Holly Thompson produces Detours, and Stephanie Case is the producer of Arts and Culture segment. Logan Haley is the newscast producer, and executive producer is Victor Figueroa. Thanks to our technical supervisor, Sebastian Grubaugh, and our faculty advisors, Caitlin Fenaro and Willa Seidenberg. Please join us next month when we debut our new format. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Priyanka Dale.